From GEICO Subconscious News, I'm Tammy Racing Thoughts, broadcasting from your brain. You think you live in a pretty safe place, but you just heard about a break-in 4 miles away, which isn't close, but it isn't far either, you know? Art Palpitations is on the scene.
I sure am, Tammy, and I don't even know why I drove out here, because as you know, you got customized renter's insurance through GEICO, so your stuff is covered.
Oh, well, that's great. Any sign of crime there, Art?
Just some light littering, Tammy, but like they say, a little litter can lead to a lot.
Wise words. It feels good to worry less. It feels good to GEICO.
Moncrief on News Talk.
You don't owe me 10 grand, silly.
I don't?
No, you did 46 months ago, and now $10,000 at a 20% monthly interest rate over 46 months means that you actually owe me $43,887,000.
Wow, she's good at maths, even though she has a really annoying accent. That's Euphoria, the third and final season of that. It starts from today on Sky Atlantic and Now TV. James Dempsey is here to tell us, was it worth waiting for?
Yeah, what a question, right? So, like, it's been, you know, the first season of Euphoria, I think, was released in 2019. And it is 7 years later, and we're only on season three. This last season was 4 years ago. And the last season, let's say, as a bridge to this one, was not especially well received, nor have either of the other major things that the creator and writer of this, Sam Levinson, has made been very well received either. Most notably, The Idol, which was absolutely pilloried from pillar to post. And he made a standalone movie, I think, for Netflix with Zendaya before, called Malcolm and Marie, that was not well received either. So it was with some trepidation that I returned to this, but I have to acknowledge, just even, you know, every week that I'm doing this, I write out this little thing of who's in the cast so that I have that information for me. And if you just go through the cast of this, I mean, they have become really big people.
Yeah, they have.
Right?
Yeah.
Like Zendaya, Jacob Elordi, Oscar nominated this year, Sydney Sweeney, maybe not her greatest year so far, but on a comeback after the huge success of The Housemaid, Coleman Domingo, 2 Oscar nominations since this has come out. Like, certainly there is an incredible pedigree to the cast here.
Mm.
And even if the second season isn't particularly fondly remembered, there are still moments of it that have become, you know, I'm reluctant to say iconic because that sounds a bit like hyperbolic, but like very much celebrated in the pop culture pantheon. Now, where I think there is success to be found here, and I must say I actually quite enjoyed this opening episode, right? So we're reintroduced right at the beginning to Zendaya as Rue Bennett. If you are not clued in, she's a drug addict, and where we found her in the first 2 seasons was in high school. Now, when I say high school, like Euphoria High is this, you know, a pop culture term for a school that could not possibly ever exist.
Yeah.
Because these teens never went to class, they never did homework, they never had a test. They instead were doing drugs and each other, yeah. Essentially, okay. Right?
At this age of the game, though, like, yeah, we're not pretending they're still high school.
No. So okay, we have jumped forward in time, and we now find all of our characters in their early 20s, let's say.
Yeah.
And actually, normally when a show tries to do that, like as in, you know, when it goes from being a high school show to a college age show, it struggles, right? I'm looking at teen soaps here,
yeah,
in the Dawson's Creek vein, in the Saved by the Bell vein, etc., right? And look, that's 30 years ago, so we'll give it a pass. But like, they don't successfully navigate this change in the personality and milieu of the characters. Whereas I think here it actually works very well, because the characters were already adults pretending to be teenagers anyway. So now they're just adults pretending to be adults. So we have Rue essentially as a drug mule, as we heard in the clip there. Maude Apatow, her friend Lexi, is working on is like an assistant to a producer played by Sharon Stone. Hunter Schafer doesn't appear in this first episode, but Jacob Elordi and Sydney Sweeney are a couple. As Nate and Cassie, they're married, and essentially she wants to earn money for their wedding by using a certain facet of the internet to do so, and he's not into it. And also you get a short scene with Coleman Domingo as Rue's sponsor, Ali. All in, I thought it was vintage Euphoria, right? In the sense that it was stylish, it was confident, it took its time. I mean, it begins with this 10-minute long sequence of Rue doing a bit of drug muling, and there's very little dialogue, but Zendaya, who people I think would have written off as this Disney childhood star, who then, you know, went on to the kind of Marvel adjacent Spider-Man movies, to then go on to Euphoria to really sort of cut her dramatic teeth, has, you know, this show and her are intrinsically linked to each other. And she is unbelievably believable as this reckless, careless, self-destructive drug addict who is utterly watchable. She's won 2 Emmys already for it. And, you know, I found this first episode a really strong showcase of her understanding who this character is, in spite of all of the industry gossip about how toxic this set has been.
Oh, really?
Because since the last season, you know, debuted in, you know, 4 years ago, several, I'm not going to say leads of the show, but like some of the co-stars, some of the other teens who obviously were adults, have gone their separate ways and have not had nice things to say about Sam Levinson. And then it's been, you know, a very tragic set as well, in the sense that it has lost one of its major stars. So it lost Angus Cloud, who played Fezco. He died of a drug overdose a couple of years ago. Eric Dane is in this season. People will know him as McSteamy from Grey's Anatomy. He died of motor neuron disease earlier this year. And then one of its producers, Kevin Turin, he's still credited on the show, but he died while driving a car. I'm not quite sure what happened, but anyway, yeah, he passed away. Okay. So they've had this very difficult period of time, yeah, where they're trying to adjust to the show and make the best of what they can, while also coming off the critical drubbing of everything else, the kind of lukewarm reception to much of season two. And yet, for me, I found it incredibly watchable, incredibly stylish, incredibly magnetic. And yeah, I'm hooked.
Yeah, and this is the final season, is that without doubt the final season?
All I know is that Zendaya, to quote her on an interview on the Drew Barrymore talk show, said that yes, she thinks that this is the final season. And I could see they're going out with 8 episodes here, that like, I don't think the cast, you know, want to be tied to this show forever while they're at their peak now, right? They obviously want to go off and explore other opportunities and other avenues. I would say this is, yeah, a farewell.
Yeah. Given that the first season, they were all in high school and they were young, and it was, I mean, is this still for young people in a sense?
I mean, I don't think it was ever for young people personally. Yeah. Like, as in, it was never this was never a teen soap opera in the kind of Dawson's Creek vibe, right? This was always a vision of 30 and 40 somethings of like, what if I could go to high school with all the mores of a 30, 40 something year old adult and behave like that? Because that's how these quote unquote teenagers, children behaved in the first 2 seasons of Euphoria. It's not for children, but certainly it has found an audience with younger people. I mean, teenagers plus, let's say. But like, no, this is still definitely made 100% with a adult audience in mind.
Okay.
Yeah.
But from the point of view of a teacher, this is a vision of hell.
I mean, I was always watching you go, why aren't they going to class? Why are they not doing any homework?
Yeah, exactly. You've all been expelled. Right. We'll move on to our second show. It is Malcolm in the Middle, Life's Still Unfair. You can stream the entire series now on Disney Plus. Here's a clip.
Yeah, I look different. But hey, everything about me is different.
I have a girlfriend.
And the best thing in the whole world.
My daughter, Leah.
Dad, quit it.
My life is fantastic now. All I have to do is stay completely away from my family.
That's all he needs to do. Frankie Muniz, is that
Muniz?
Muniz. Malcolm isn't even an actor anymore. He drives cars.
Yeah, he's a race car driver, like a NASCAR race car driver. So I think, look, this is part of this glut of noughties sitcoms being rebooted, right? But I must say, of all of them, this was a really welcome kind of family reunion for me, simply because, one, it was lovely to see almost the entire cast back together. But two, the brevity of this, right? So this was first mooted by Bryan Cranston, who of all of the cast has gone on to he's the one who knocks, right?
Stratosphere. Like, yeah.
Absolutely, right? And I don't think that this, you know, ironically, I don't think that this would exist as a property were it not for the success of Breaking Bad and perhaps the bankable quality of Cranston as like a star to attach a name to something too. That's too many, too many prepositions.
We understand you.
But basically, Bryan Cranston has been the driving force behind this for about 10 years because he first mooted writing a feature film to reunite the cast around 2016 and to write the film himself and maybe bring them all back. And it seems that, one, he has an excellent relationship with his on-screen wife, Jane Kaczmarek, as Lois. And two, the pair of them have an excellent relationship with their on-screen children, because although the cast have yet, like, haven't, you know, come back together prior to this publicly in, you know, on screen, they seem to regularly meet up and they are in contact with each other quite frequently. Only one of the sons from the original run from the 2002, however, maybe 2006 run, did not want to be on the show. That was Dewey, played by Eric Per Sullivan. He has moved on in his life. He totally supports them in making the project, but he has just no interest in doing it himself.
Okay.
But everyone else from the main cast reunited. And what I loved about it is there's only four episodes. There are four 30-minute episodes. You know, when I first saw them on Disney Plus, all four, I thought, is this the whole thing? Or like, you know, are we going to get a week-by-week release here up to maybe eight, up to 10? But no, it is four self-contained episodes that follow the family as Hal and Lois move towards their 40th anniversary and a party celebrating that. They're trying to reconnect with Malcolm, who has, after years of battling his mother and his brothers and his father, etc., has built his own private life, moving away, is raising a teenage daughter unbeknownst to them. Now, it's the usual family hijinks of Malcolm in the Middle. And there's no denying when they do revivals of this, it's let's play the greatest hits.
Yeah.
Right? So by that, do we get, you know, Bryan Cranston being absolutely devil may care about his body at whatever age he is?
Yeah.
Yes. And being shaved by Lois? Of course we do. Do we get Lois shouting aggressively at people? Of course we do. But it was actually the minor characters reappearing that I was particularly thrilled by. You know, Stevie, Malcolm's friend in the wheelchair with the one lung who's panting away.
Yeah.
His father, Abe. You know, all of Malcolm's friends from the Krelboyne class, Craig from, you know, Lois's colleague who was in love with her permanently and getting nowhere. It was lovely to just get a single serving of these people, if you get me, rather than playing the same hits over and over and over again.
Yeah.
It was nice to play the hits once, right? And I think all of the other revivals could take a lesson from this, right? Very few revivals, you know, have come back massively successful in the sense that they don't run for seasons and seasons and seasons and seasons. They might get two if they're lucky. This isn't aiming for that. Now, this was successful enough that maybe in 10 years' time, we might get another for the 50th wedding anniversary, another couple of episodes here and there. And it'll be lovely to catch up with what the family are doing then. But yeah, it just understood exactly what it wanted to be. It played the greatest hits in a way I enjoyed. It was funny. I laughed out loud several times. And of course, when it ended, it immediately started playing the first episode of the first season, which I absolutely enjoyed and was incredulous to believe that when that debuted on the 9th of January 2000 in the US, it had over 20 million viewers. And you know how...
in the days of TV, yeah.
How TV has changed in those 26 years massively.
Yeah. The whole premise of the show, Malcolm in the middle child, obviously that doesn't fit anymore. It's not applicable anymore. So the idea of, is it more about his estrangement from his family?
Well, it's not quite fair to call it estrangement because it's, you know, it's only on one side. His family aren't even aware that this is happening. It's just him navigating his past with his family and trying to overcome it. Yeah, obviously that the original show was obviously about Malcolm as the middle child, but actually by its creator, I mean, this is a name that looks, it sounds like it's made up, Linwood Boomer. He based it on his own life. So he, I mean, how vain, I was a child genius too, right? He also was a child actor. He was on Little House on the Prairie as a child and then went on to create this. But the idea of the show was, you know, about a genius child amongst a lower, you know, struggling middle class family, let's call them, who are, you know, not rich and living on the breadline and barely making ends meet, but who clearly love each other and have individual passions along the way that they each can explore and excel at. The show now, like, look, it touches at some modern things. You know, at the very end of the original run, spoilers for this ending of Malcolm in the Middle, we find out that Lois is pregnant once again with a fifth or sixth child. I've lost count at this point. We find that child now is Kelly, I think. Yeah. Kelly, who is a non-binary child. But if, you know, if you're worried about the woke mind virus, I mean, it's barely touched on. So it'll be fine. Right. But other than that, yeah, look, I suppose now it's about family dynamics and how the modern family communicates with each other more so than about your position within the family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what does Malcolm do for a living, actually, given that he was a genius?
Yeah. He runs a non-profit organization.
What kind of a non-profit?
He runs a charity that helps supermarkets use their leftover food and connect it to homeless charities.
Okay, well, that's a good thing to do. That's a good thing to do, though, you know, with his brains. as his mammy probably never said. Right, those three shows are Euphoria at season three. You can stream new episodes of the third season from today on Sky Atlantic and Now TV. Malcolm in the Middle, Life Still Unfair. You can stream the entire series of four now on Disney Plus. And The Testaments, which is our third show, which I completely forgot about, we had to get to. So let's play a clip of that.
Agnes Mackenzie, how the time goes by. I have been watching you for quite a while now.
Why, Aunt Lydia?
Soon to be eligible.
May God make me truly worthy.
Right, that's The Testaments. New episodes every Wednesday on Disney+. Do we need The Testaments? In the sense that The Handmaid's Tale is there. Is there anything about The Testaments that's new, different or interesting and distinct from The Handmaid's Tale?
I guess it's got a younger cast, right?
Yeah.
It follows a different aspect of Gilead that perhaps we haven't explored previously, right?
Okay.
So obviously, The Handmaid's Tale, when it first debuted, was a massive success. I think lots of people fell off the wagon along the way. I went the whole distance with it, and I must say, I really liked it, even to the bitter end.
Yeah.
But at times it was brutal. At times it was miserable. At times it was frustrating that, you know, you would think Gilead would actually take a bit more action here. But anyway, right?
Yes.
But all in, I liked it, right? Now, the novel, The Testaments, I think is set 15 years after the events of The Handmaid's Tale, and it has been barely a couple of years at most since the end of The Handmaid's Tale TV series. But this is from Bruce Miller, the creator of that. And I can't say its bones are the same, right?
Mm.
By that I mean we have voiceover, we have great needle drops, we have incredible visually iconographic use of colour. Right, like as in the visuals of the first series of those handmaids going around in their red hoods and white wimples, I don't know what they're called, whatever, anyway, were arresting and visually interesting. And here we follow Chase Infinity, late of one battle after another, as Agnes Mackenzie. She is June's daughter from the original run.
Right.
But yeah. She has now grown up under the eye of Gilead and is a plum. So she is a schoolgirl going around in this plum uniform, waiting essentially for her period to start so that she can then be
married off,
yeah. Essentially. So we are following plums and pinks and, you know, Marthas in grey and aunts in brown, etc., etc. So the show is visually so arresting and so interesting that, like, it is a real treat to watch. But it's also incredibly bleak because it is a show about, you know, totalitarianism and groupthink. And I think that's maybe the best avenue of newness that you can see here, in that it explores what it would be like to have spent your whole life not only growing up in this totalitarian regime, but under it and buying into it. Because, you know, we see there's a very graphic scene in the first episode where, you know, these girls in a school watch someone being punished. I won't go into what it is, but you see how they are whipped up into a fury, you know, an aunt is saying, should we punish him? And they are like whipped up into this chorus of agreement and groupthink and how people get swept away with it. It also opens with this like subtitle line saying, Gilead was blah, 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 it blah, 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 blah. It was taken down by the women within it or something like that. So we know, and there's a plan for three seasons here of this show. We know that by the end of these three seasons, we already know the outcome, right? Because they're telling us,
okay,
what's going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
So the first show was obviously about an individual and her attempt to break free from that. And at times it got a bit like, let's give Elizabeth Moss a machine gun and she's a super spy working her way around, you know, Gilead. And at times that got a little bit trite and tiresome. I can't deny it. That can't happen yet because we only have three episodes of this. But we do have some brilliant visual casting in the form of Lucy Halliday. She plays Daisy. She's a Pearl girl. That is a girl who comes from Canada and basically is recruited into Gilead by like missionaries who are in Gilead. But of course, all is not quite what it seems. The advantage this show has, I guess, is that there's an entire novel, a Booker Prize winning novel at that, upon which to base their story. So they know the path that this is going to follow, if they follow that exactly. All in, I can't deny it. I really liked it. You know, I really liked The Handmaid's Tale. And I really like this as well, even if it is bleak and miserable quite frequently.
Yeah. Is there any reference in it to the events of The Handmaid's Tale.
Oh, definitely.
The resistance in Canada. And
Mayday, yeah. All of this is referred to, yeah. Like, does that mean you need to have done your Handmaid's Tale homework in order to start it? No, I mean, they know how to hold your hand through that as well.
Yeah, and do we see anyone in this that was in The Handmaid's Tale?
Definitely, yeah.
Is that a spoiler?
I mean, I don't know if it is a spoiler, but in case it is. But I think what is worth acknowledging, even of The Handmaid's Tale, was, you know, much like Euphoria, there was excellent casting in The Handmaid's Tale. They really found interesting ways to use different characters. The connective tissue mostly here is with Aunt Lydia, played by Anne Dowd. Mm. She's in The Handmaid's Tale as this total villain. Here, it's a more complex and different version of Aunt Lydia than we have previously seen. So worth checking out for that as well. But like all of the cast, that all of the roles were played interestingly in The Handmaid's Tale. And this young cast of unknowns, most of them I've never seen before, are actually making very, very good use of the material they have.
Right. And so there's no flashbacks, because there was one with Aunt Lydia where she was like totally woke.
Yeah.
Yeah. She was like woke lawyer kind of thing. So maybe she reverts back to that. The Handmaid's Tale started out great, says the texter, but gradually Elizabeth Moss developed Claire Danes syndrome, endlessly looking depressed. Well, it was kind of depressing. There wasn't many laughs in it, it must be said. James, thanks a million as ever. James Dempsey there. I'll say those three shows again. Euphoria, you can stream new episodes on Sky Atlantic and Now TV from today. Malcolm in the Middle, Life Still Unfair, you can stream the entire series now on Disney Plus. And The Testaments, you can stream new episodes of season one every Wednesday on Disney Plus.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.